welcome to this podcast. Calliope Awards for 2007 were presented on Tuesday, April 17. This event was sponsored by the Languages and Literature Division, the Liberal Arts Division, and the Lyceum Committee of the Annandale Campus of Northern Virginia Community College. Now you will hear a winner in the fiction category as she reads from her work. Martha Johnson, Catherine.
In reading from a fiction piece, it's kind of hard to choose which part to share with you, the exposition, the action in the middle, or the amazing conclusion. But in this case, I've chosen a part from near the beginning, in the hopes that if you choose to read the rest of it, and I hope you will pick up a copy of Calliope, that you'll have a little bit of an introduction. It wasn't always like this. Once, she was at home and she could lie on the floor with Bugs Bunny on the TV and soft jazz coming from the kitchen, and she would draw things. Sometimes from the cartoons, sometimes her mother. She liked it when the picture of Mama appeared in her mind and she could put it onto the paper. She still saw her mother sometimes, but now the picture was fuzzy and gray, hard to see. Too fuzzy to draw from. It had been like that once. But then something went wrong. She wasn't sure what. And then the people had come, saying, "We're from the county." What was the county? In her mind, she had seen her pencils and had run to get them. They had tried to stop her, but she wouldn't leave until the pencils were clutched in her little fist. And then the long, long, endless weeks of being watched. They would watch her draw, ask her to draw things, and she would cry when she couldn't see them in her mind for the tears inside. They would say, "Catherine, you draw something so well. Why can't you draw this for us?" And she would shake her head because the words made no sense. Even that name, Catherine, it had no meaning to its owner. Now there were always people with cameras and microphones and, "Here, little girl, here are some pencils for you." But no, she wouldn't take them. She liked hers, the red one, the green one, the worn-down yellow one that was little more than a stub. She liked to draw with them, to see the patterns they made. She liked it a lot when the pictures appeared, and she could just watch them grow on the paper like Virginia creeper in graphite. "Katie, this is beautiful." Words, always words. She wants pictures, but she can't ask because this world, it's a word world, and there's little room for a little girl with pictures in her head.
Now you will hear winners in the creative nonfiction category as they read from their works. S. Ann Robinson, Swing Low, and Katrina Smith, Carrying On.
I'm going to read from the nonfiction creative essay portion today, and I'm going to start in the middle. It's an essay, it's a memoir about my mother who died of Alzheimer's, and the memoir is about my struggle to cope with how our relationship had changed. So I'm choosing to read the middle part where I'm remembering her as she was whole and strong in my life, and I'll let you read the other parts on your own. Mother had always been my port in a storm, my guru, my model of competence and efficiency. At every stage of my life, she had guided me through the growth issues important to thriving: comfort, safety, love, the early years, encouragement, patience, praise, the pre-adolescent years. "You can do anything you can visualize," she would say. "Anything you can set your mind to." And I believed her. I achieved successes in school and extracurricular activities that caused others to assume I was gifted and talented, but I wasn't. I simply followed excellent advice given by a master. In my teen years, she listened and listened and listened. In my college years, she trusted me implicitly, aided me concretely, and communicated frequently. As the grandmother of my children, she loved them unconditionally, joyfully. Her heart, her mind, and her hands worked in perfect harmony as she brought forth her best to those around her, showing by example how to serve my family, my friends, my community. We were, by any standards, financially poor. But I didn't realize it until I looked back as a more affluent adult. My mother had stopped indulging in self-pity and wouldn't allow her daughters to either. Gratitude was to be our attitude. After all, just look at all we had to be thankful for. There's a family photo of my sister and me taken in our dusty yard, the West Texas sun and wind competing for dominance. We're scrubbed clean, standing straight, and flashing huge smiles. Our homemade dresses are pressed and our hair shines in the bright sun. We are pleased with ourselves as happy children look when posing for a picture. I know now that the only difference between us and the poignant photographs of dirty Depression-era children staring blankly through fences was the love, faith, skill, and determination of our mother. Now in my middle age, when I trusted my mother to show me how to transition to the next stage of life, how to age gracefully, how to live with my elder years with courage, insight, and meaning, it was my task to show her the bathroom and to shield her from astonished, gaping strangers. How could this be? Hadn't my grandmother and great-grandmother lived to become the wise women of their communities, dispensing love and advice well into their 90s? Hadn't Mother earned the right to be their heir? Where was justice? I railed. Where was peace? Where, I finally asked, was God?
I'll be reading the first paragraph of my creative nonfiction piece, so it should be short and sweet. This is the bedroom of a normal 19-year-old, festooned with rock star posters, cluttered with books, video game controllers, and guitars. The curtains are drawn, and in the half light of late afternoon, you can just make out the long, lanky shape of the man perched on the end of the bed. He doesn't notice you standing in the doorway, staring with curiosity at him. He's bending over a bass with utmost concentration, a slight frown on his lips as long fingers dance a rhythm across the strings. Maybe your shadow falling over what little light fills the small room makes him look up, or maybe it's the little involuntary sound you make when you realize he's playing one of your favorite songs. But after a quick introduction, he moves over easily, making room for you to sit down next to him. The easy conversation you were unable to make with your boyfriend's mother downstairs just a minute ago flows freely with his brother, the bass player, the invalid. You have no way of knowing right now that this is the first conversation he's had with someone who's not his family in weeks, that the easy smile that flashes across his lips has become a luxury for him. You don't know how much it means to him, though you will later. For now, you simply talk about music, about his brother, about the meaning of life. But you can't help but wonder at the strange yellow pallor of his complexion. And when he shifts the bass against his legs, the collar of his shirt falls open to expose a long, angry scar disappearing down the length of his chest. His eyes meet yours and read the unspoken question there. Without changing his expression, without losing the smile he's worn since you walked into the room, he tells you he has medullary carcinoma and he's recovering from his fifth surgery. "I'm sorry," you say, the words stuttering out from between your lips into an awkward silence, and you hate yourself for saying them, hate yourself for the condescension and the pity that crept into your voice, when he told you there was no self-pity in his own.
Don't miss the podcast next week. You'll want to hear winners in the English as a Second Language category. Robert Brown of the Technology Application Center is Technical Director of this podcast. I'm Shirley Noon.